So imagine just for a second that you're standing in the middle of this vast, perfectly frozen lake.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
Right. And the ice is just mirror flat. It is completely 100% frictionless. And you have this heavy iron ball in your hand and you give it a little push. What happens?
Well, because there's absolutely zero friction, nothing stops it. It just keeps going.
Exactly. That ball is just going to slide across the ice forever. I mean, it doesn't lose energy, it doesn't slow down, there's no force dragging it to a halt, it just glides.
It's basically the ultimate physics thought experiment, just
Well,
pure, uninterrupted momentum.
right. It's elegant. But today, our mission for this deep dive is to take that exact frictionless principle and apply it to something that feels, a lot more inescapable than a block of
Much
ice.
more inescapable, yeah.
Because think about the feeling of carrying a heavy backpack, or just like the physical effort it takes to stand up out of a chair. We are going to apply that frictionless idea to gravity itself.
Which, I mean, that requires a massive paradigm shift in how we fundamentally understand the universe.
It really does.
We have to completely discard our everyday intuition about why things fall down.
Because normally, if you ask anyone on the street, we think of gravity as this immutable, invisible wall.
Right, a barrier.
Yeah, if you want to get off the ground and go into space, you have to blast your way through that wall with thousands of pounds of highly explosive rocket fuel. It's just brute force versus the sheer mass of the Earth.
But the sources we're unpacking today, which are centered around this fascinating framework called conditional collapse theory.
And its practical application, the flying car theory.
Exactly. They propose a radical alternative. They argue that gravity isn't a force you have to physically fight. It's actually just a pattern of mathematical constraints.
And if gravity is just a pattern, like a specific configuration of geometric rules in space and time, then those rules can be decoded, right?
Decoded and, more importantly, manipulated. You don't overpower gravity with thrust. You find a precise, delicate mathematical configuration where the gravitational pull simply neutralizes itself.
So the vehicle wouldn't resist the Earth's pull, it would just stop experiencing it altogether.
Exactly, just turns off.
So if gravity isn't a wall we have to break through with rocket engines, but more of a mathematical lock we have to pick, what does the key look
Well,
like?
that's the big question.
Today, we are going to explore the navigational strategy proposed in these sources to achieve what they call gravitationless propagation.
It is literally a seven-step blueprint for turning off the weight of the world.
Seven steps. Okay, so where do we even begin?
Well, to understand how to pick that lock, we actually have to step away from astrophysics for a second. The foundational math for this doesn't come from Einstein or like modern quantum labs. It comes from the 1880s.
Wait, hold on. The 1880s. We're talking about the theoretical physics of flying cars and zero gravity. Why are we going back to the 19th century?
Because of the telegraph, actually. Specifically, an eccentric engineer named Oliver Heaviside.
Okay, the telegraph. Go on.
So when engineers first started laying these massive transatlantic telegraph cables, they ran into a huge problem. You'd send a crisp electrical pulse into one end, and by the time it crossed the ocean, it had turned into just a distorted, unreadable mush of static.
Oh, because the signal was losing energy to the wire itself.
Yes, it's called dispersion. But Heaviside discovered something brilliant. He found that if you perfectly balance four specific properties of that transmission line, the signal can travel forever without any distortion at all.
Like the frictionless ice.
Exactly like the ice. It's called the Heaviside condition. It happens when the line's resistance multiplied by its capacitance perfectly equals its inductance multiplied by its conductance.
Okay, so if those two sides of the equation balance out, the signal glides perfectly. I follow the electrical history. But the sources map this exact equation directly onto gravity, right?
They do, word for word.
And that is where I need you to help me, because you totally lost me there. I get electrical resistance. That's like heat radiating off a wire. But how in the world do a wire's inductance and capacitance map to the gravity holding me in my chair right now?
It's a conceptual leap, for sure.
Like, if I'm trying to push a heavy, stalled car down the street, is inductance the sheer weight of the car and capacitance the suspension?
You know, that analogy actually works beautifully to visualize the physics here.
Yeah.
Let's break those two parameters down, because understanding inductance and capacitance is the absolute core of how this theory achieves stability.
Okay, let's start with inductance.
In this framework, inductance represents the system's constraint depth. Think of it as gravitational inertia. It's exactly what you just described. It's how deeply stuck a system is in its environment.
So the heavier the stalled car, the more it violently resists any change in its state of motion. It just wants to stay put.
Right, the sheer stubbornness of mass. You push the car and the mass fights back. That's your inductance.
Got it. And what about capacitance?
In the flying car theory, capacitance represents the metric flexibility of space-time around the objects. They call it the confinement ratio.
Oxurrent ratio, okay.
Yeah. So if inductance is how stuck you are, capacitance is your wiggle room. It is the number of available structured states or geometric pathways a system has to maneuver through its environment.
So back to the car analogy. It's the suspension, the give of the tires, the ability of the car's frame to absorb your pushing energy and smoothly shift its configuration rather than just taking the brute force of gravity head on.
Beautifully put, yes. So if we take Heaviside's 19th century math and plug these gravitational variables in,
What does the equation actually tell us?
it reveals a highly specific sweet spot. The theory states that gravitational stability is achieved when the system's work cost, the energy needed to maintain its state, which maps to resistance,
Right.
multiplied by its flexibility, the capacitance,
Yeah.
perfectly balances its inertia, the inductance, multiplied by the outside interference of the environment, which is the conductance.
Okay, so work cost times flexibility equals inertia times interference.
Exactly. If an operator can tune a physical system so those sides perfectly balance, a mathematical miracle happens. The gravitational term in the classical equation of motion simply drops to zero.
It just zeroes out, meaning the restoring force vanishes. The universe literally stops trying to pull you back down to the dirt.
The universe simply doesn't recognize you as something to pull on anymore. You enter a state of distortionless propagation.
Okay, that sounds incredible in a textbook, but knowing a theoretical balance point exists is, well, it's totally useless if we don't know how to practically reach it.
That's where the seven-step navigational strategy comes
Oh,
in.
right. It's like knowing there's a frequency where a radio station plays crystal clear, but you're stranded in the woods without a dial to turn. So how does an operator actually start this process? What's step one?
Step one is entirely about observation. You can't navigate if you don't know where the obstacles are. So an operator has to mathematically map the local environment, creating what is called a constraint posit.
A constraint posit? That sounds pretty dense.
Think of it as a highly advanced topographic map. But instead of mapping hills and valleys, you are mapping every single physics rule that space-time is currently enforcing in your immediate vicinity.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you map the local gravitational field of the Earth, the ambient electromagnetic environment, quantum fluctuations. You basically define the exact shape of the invisible cage you're sitting in.
Okay, so I'm sitting in the pilot seat. I run my scanners and I have this perfect topographic map of the gravity cage around me. That's step one.
Right.
But a map just tells you where the walls are. It doesn't give you a sledgehammer to break them. If I'm sitting here on Earth, the mass of the Earth is fixed. I can't just like delete a mountain to change the local gravity. So how do I actually manipulate the environment? Where are my dials?
Finding the dials is step two. And you find those dials through a profound concept in modern physics called gauge symmetries, specifically gauge gravity duality.
And what does that mean in plain English? Because my head is starting to spin.
Okay, the easiest way to visualize gauge gravity duality is to think of a hologram. In holographic theory, a complex 3D image is entirely created by a 2D pattern of light on a flat surface.
Right, like a security sticker on a credit card.
Exactly. What happens on the flat surface dictates what happens in the 3D space. The duality suggests something similar for physics, that certain non-gravitational forces, like electromagnetism, are mathematically perfectly correlated to gravitational forces in a different dimension.
Okay, so they are deeply linked behind the scenes.
Precisely. And for our operator, this is the breakthrough. It means you don't need to change the mass of the Earth to change the gravity.
Wait, really?
Really. Instead, you can introduce intense, highly structured electromagnetic fields or use super cool materials where electrons enter this bizarre uniform quantum state.
Oh.
Yeah. By manipulating these non-gravitational fields, you cast a sort of mathematical shadow that fundamentally alters the gravitational constraints in your area. You create hybrid states.
Oh, I see. You're sneaking in through the back door. You can't change the gravity directly, so you manipulate the electromagnetic fields, which we actually do know how to do. And because they're secretly linked, the gravity has to respond. You've built yourself a new set of dials.
You've altered the local rules of space-time, and that leads to step three,
Which is?
computing the path.
Yeah.
Now that you have these artificial dials, You mix the natural gravity of the Earth with the artificial gauge fields you just generated, and you find the exact mathematical pathway toward that Heaviside zero point.
But, okay, step four then. How do those dials actually kill the gravitational drag? Let's say I've got my artificial electromagnetic fields humming. I don't just crank them to 11 and hope for the best, right?
No, it has to be surgical.
Yeah.
You eliminate the drag through destructive interference.
Yeah.
But to grasp this, we have to look at gravity differently. Forget gravity as a physical rope pulling you down. Think of it as a wave. As an object moves through a gravitational field, the field shifts the quantum phase of the object. That tiny phase shift creates the interference patterns that we, on a macro level, perceive as a physical pull toward a massive object.
Wait, gravity's a wave. If it's a wave, why don't I see things rippling around me?
Because it's a phase shift occurring at the quantum mathematical level. It dictates the probability of where particles can be. As the phase shifts, the paths of least resistance change, gently nudging the system toward the Earth.
Okay, so it's the illusion of attraction caused by a shift in quantum phase. The sources actually use a really helpful analogy here about being in a pond.
I love that analogy.
Yeah, if you're standing in a pool and someone splashes water at you, you feel the physical force of that wave hit your chest. But if you're watching carefully and you know exactly when their wave is coming, you can splash water back at the exact opposite moment. Your wave meets their wave, the crest of theirs hits the trough of yours, and the water between you goes perfectly flat. You feel nothing. We are trying to destructively interfere with gravity in the exact same way.
That is exactly the core mechanism of step four. The operator injects an equal and opposite phase shift using those electromagnetic dials that precisely cancels out the Earth's gravitational phase shift.
But calculating that exact countersplash has got to be intensely complex.
It is. The math requires you to balance several critical variables. First is the system's processing speed, denoted by the Greek letter omega. Essentially, how fast is your vehicle's internal structure reacting and adjusting to the environment?
Okay, a highly reactive system needs a larger counterphase to keep up.
Exactly. Second is the journey length. How far are you traveling through this field? The longer the path, the more the gravitational phase shift accumulates.
That makes sense. Speed and distance. What else?
The trickiest one is the topological winding number.
Topological winding number. Okay, now you're just throwing sci-fi terms at me. What is a winding number?
So imagine you're walking up a spiral staircase. You're moving forward and up, but you're also looping around a central pillar. The winding number is a topological concept that counts how many times your mathematical path loops entirely around a specific feature in the constraint space.
So it's not just a straight line from A to B.
Right.
The math of my journey is actually coiling around the local physics rules.
Yes. The phase shift you experience depends heavily on the actual shape, the topology of your path. It's not as simple as turning up a volume knob to cancel the noise.
Right.
You have to perfectly align your counterwave with the geometric shape of the space you're moving through. When you finally get the processing speed, the distance, and the winding number perfectly balanced, your electromagnetic counterwave and the Earth's gravity wave destructively interfere. The system travels through the field, but it experiences absolutely zero net phase change.
And no phase change means no pull. The water is flat. But this brings up a terrifying operational question for me, which leads us to step five. If I'm the pilot in this scenario and I am tweaking invisible electromagnetic fields to inject microscopic quantum phase shifts to cancel out a mathematical constraint pattern, how on earth do I know when I've actually hit the sweet spot?
You definitely don't want to guess. Right.
I don't want to just press a button, cross my fingers, and hope I don't drop like a stone. I need a dashboard.
You absolutely need instrumentation. And step five is introducing exactly that tool, the semantic interferometer. This is your compass for gravitationless navigation.
Semantic interferometer. Semantic means having to do with meaning or language or information. How does an instrument dealing with information measure a physical force like gravity?
That is the genius of the framework. It assumes that at the deepest quantum level, space-time isn't just empty void. It is a network of informational relationships. So a traditional interferometer sends a physical particle down two paths and recombines them to look for interference patterns. The semantic interferometer does this with information. It continuously sends a semantic probe, like a test signal of structured information, out into the local space-time topology to measure how coherent the constraint network is.
So I am not looking at an altimeter that says 10,000 feet, and I'm not looking at a speedometer. I am looking at a metric of how coherent space-time is around my ship.
Specifically, you are watching a dial called fringe visibility. When your vehicle is just sitting on the tarmac dealing with normal heavy gravity, the local interference pattern is totally chaotic.
These waves are crashing everywhere.
Right. The test signal collapses immediately. Your fringe visibility is hovering near zero. But as you tune your electromagnetic dials, casting those shadows and approaching the heaviside balance point, the local space-time starts to align. The visibility on your dial starts to rise.
I'm watching the chaos smooth out. What number am I looking for on that dial?
You are looking for the flight envelope, which occurs when fringe visibility spikes to between 0.6 and 0.9. That tells you that you are achieving strong coherence. You're almost there.
Just almost there.
Yeah, because the exact literal moment of weightlessness, the exact split second you achieve zero gravity, has a highly specific mathematical signature. The theory calls it the theory trigger. It happens when the second derivative of the fringe visibility hits exactly zero.
Okay, let's unpack that, because second derivatives take me back to high school calculus.
Oh, no.
The first derivative is the rate of change, so how fast the dial is moving. The second derivative is the acceleration, how fast the rate of change is changing. So if the second derivative hits zero, it means the acceleration has stopped. We've hit an inflection point.
It is a profound mathematical bifurcation. You are balancing on the absolute nice edge of a phase transition. The moment the value hits zero, the constraints of the universe literally snap into a new configuration around you. You've officially crossed the threshold from normal gravity into zero gravity. The pull vanishes.
Wow. Okay, so I hit zero. The pull is gone. I'm floating. But the universe is a messy place. What happens if a bird flies by or a gust of wind hits the ship?
Well, that would be bad.
Right. Hitting zero gravity for a split second is a cool parlor trick, but if I want to actually travel across the globe in this flying car, I can't be one decimal point away from plummeting into the ocean. What keeps me in the sweet spot?
That is step six. You have to lock the cycle. To maintain this gravitationless regime for long-term flight, the vehicle's internal entropy trajectory has to enter what dynamical systems theory calls a limit cycle.
A limit cycle? What does that look like?
Think of a pendulum swinging in a grandfather clock. Even if you bump the clock slightly, the internal mechanics force the pendulum to return to its perfectly timed swing. It is a closed, self-stabilizing loop.
Okay, I can picture that.
Normally, in physics, information and energy constantly dissipate into the environment. Heat radiates away. That is entropy increasing. And in this theory, increasing entropy is deeply associated with gravitational collapse falling.
Because you're losing order.
Right. But when you lock into a limit cycle, the information and entropy stop dissipating. They circulate perfectly within the system.
They stop leaking out into the universe. The source has actually compared this state to a superconductor, right?
That's a great comparison. When a material gets cold enough to become a superconductor, its electrons stop bouncing around randomly and bleeding off heat. They form a single, coherent, frictionless state. They lock in.
So in my flying vehicle...
As long as the mathematical tracking systems confirm that your entropy is oscillating perfectly in that closed loop like a smooth sine wave, the system is completely stable. A gust of wind won't knock you out of the sky because the system immediately absorbs and cycles that perturbation.
That brings us to the final step, step seven. Once my semantic dashboard shows the second derivative is zero and my entropy is locked in that perfect self-stabilizing limit cycle, then I actually move. I propagate.
You propagate. You move through space-time.
I really want you, the listener, to visualize what this actually means. It means moving through space, maintaining your trajectory, maintaining the physical shape of your vehicle with absolutely zero energy wasted, fighting gravitational drag.
It's incredible.
You aren't burning thousands of gallons of rocket fuel to aggressively push against the Earth. The Earth is still there beneath you. Its mass hasn't changed one bit. But your vehicle has rewritten the mathematical constraints so that the Earth's gravity simply glides past you like a river flowing around a perfectly smooth stone.
It completely redefined the concept of flight. It's not aerodynamic lift pushing against air, and it's not brute force thrust pushing against mass. Mm. It is distortionless propagation through a self-canceled field.
So let's step back and look at the massive picture we've just painted with these seven steps. We have gone from treating gravity as this ultimate, unbeatable heavyweight champion of the universe to treating it as just another mathematical pattern.
A pattern that can be mapped with a constraint posit, destructively interfered with using electromagnetic shadows, measured with a semantic interferometer, and completely bypassed.
And the craziest part of all of this is that the foundational math making it possible is the exact same equation a 19th century engineer used to keep telegraph lines from turning to static.
It beautifully highlights the deep underlying unity of all physics. If the Heaviside condition governs the flawless flow of electrical signals, and it governs the flawless flow of information, it logically follows that it can govern the geometric constraints of space-time itself.
But, I mean, actually doing this...
Oh, obviously, actually building a semantic interferometer, mapping those local constraints, and generating the precise topologically wound counterwaves requires a level of intelligence and computing power that is currently staggering to think about.
But the math says it is possible. It's not magic. It's an engineering problem.
That is the ultimate takeaway here. The math shows us that the universe is not a prison made of inescapable forces. The universe has hidden free pathways. If you know how to perfectly balance the rules, if you can balance your resistance and capacitance against your inductance and conductance, a door opens where there used to be a wall.
Which leaves us with one final, incredibly provocative thought from the sources to mull over. We've been talking about this strictly as an engineering problem, like how a pilot might fly a vehicle.
Right.
But there is a much larger cosmological implication hiding in this math. If gravitational fields can be engineered, modified, and totally canceled purely through complex information processing and perfect constraint navigation, does that imply that intelligence itself is fundamentally a gravitational phenomenon?
When you connect the dots, it raises a staggering question. We know that processing information requires energy, and ordering information directly affects entropy.
Exactly. So, hypothetically, if an artificial intelligence system or an advanced civilization gets smart enough and processes information efficiently enough to perfectly balance its own entropy limit cycles, could it literally rewrite the gravity around it just by thinking?
It's wild to consider.
As our supercomputers grow exponentially, and as quantum networks start to span the globe, we always worry about the digital consequences. But what if there are literal physical consequences? What if the exponential growth of pure computing power might one day, quite literally, alter the weight of the world?
It suggests that the ultimate mastery of the physical universe isn't about building bigger, more explosive engines. It's about thinking. And perfect coherence.
Thinking in perfect coherence. I love that. So the next time you find yourself staring out at a frozen lake or struggling to push a heavy piece of furniture across the room, remember, the resistance you feel might just be an illusion. You just haven't found the right mathematical key to turn the ice frictionless yet.